It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
TGIF crew, and welcome to Firearm Friday. I am your host, Chris Dover. And today we're going to talk about firearm coatings with Wynn Atterbury of WMD Guns. But before we get to that, I'd like to take a minute to tell everybody out there about GunStreamer. GunStreamer is a pro firearm lifestyle, pro Second Amendment video hosting platform. And we post our stuff from the CloverTac channel over there, including these Firearm Friday podcasts. So jump on over there and check it out today. That is www.gunstreamer.com. All right, we've got Wynn on the line from WMD Guns. How are you this afternoon, Wynn?
Fantastic. How are you doing, Chris?
I am doing well. Doing well.
All right.
I've been fighting that SHOT Show bug, that SHOT Show crud, I think. But about to get that dude whipped.
Luckily, our team made it through unscathed this year. We started taking our airborne and vitamin C and zinc a couple weeks ahead of time and came out okay.
I did that as well. And I'm not convinced that's what I got. I'm not convinced that I didn't catch something, because it didn't start for me until about 3 days after. So,
goodness.
I'm not sure I didn't catch something on the way home. I didn't run into somebody or something like that, because we drove out there. So there were several stops on the way back and all that good stuff. So
yeah, half the time the plane can catch you on your way back in or the way there. I've had some people get sick on the way out.
We had a good friend last year that he went straight. When they landed, he went straight from the plane to the hospital. Spent a couple of days in the hospital. It was so bad for him. So luckily, you know, nothing like that. Just the sniffles and the sneezes and that sort of thing for me. Thanks for jumping on with us and joining us today. I do appreciate it. If you would, give us a little bit about your background and how the whole WDM Guns kind of started.
Okay. Hey, I spent right out of college, I had a mechanical engineering degree, and I started working for the Department of Defense out in California at a missile test site, and worked for the department for about 18 years, the last six of which was in the Pentagon doing science and technology programs. Wow. And I saw this coating technology on one of my projects, or thought it could be a solution to a hypersonics nozzle. We were developing some new nozzle materials, and one material worked, but it oxidized. Another material worked, but it was very, very expensive. So someone had suggested that perhaps the nickel boron coating could help with that. And once I saw that, I started thinking about all the different applications, and I ended up going to work for a small company and the inventor of nickel boron to help them prosecute the technology back into the Department of Defense. As it happened, we first started coating guns when Jessica Lynch and her convoy got ambushed and kidnapped. The story had it that she was reaching for all her M16s around her, and they were all jammed. Well, that was the first time we'd ever really fought in the moon dust that we were fighting in over there, and the dust was collecting on the oil and jamming up all the firearms.
Right.
So the inventor had thought, well, geez, we can replace all the coatings on the firearm, that is the phosphate, the chrome, the anodize, and the lubrication with one coating, and that's nickel boron. And very few people thought that was possible. In fact, some kicked us out of the room and said that was their job and not, you know, it couldn't be done.
Right.
Well, Ed had worked with Mike Rock of Rock Creek Barrels for about 30, 60 days, and they took an AR-15 that had 30,000 rounds on it without any lubrication used. Mm-hmm. And that caught the attention of a SOCOM operator, and we started working some government programs and actually finished all the testing on M4s. I got 30,000 rounds, hot, cold, sand, dust, salt, fog, and I happen to have the email that says you passed all the testing. By the way, all that was without any lubrication at all. And so we passed the test, and it went on to the next phase. So that's how we started coating firearms. And, you know, we were working strictly with government, a couple of the government contractors. And then in 2009, you know, it's time to commercialize it and prove to the world that, you know, you could coat a bolt carrier group and other guns and have them operate loop free, or the best thing is they're easy to clean up and they're very highly reliable at that point. Right. You don't have to operate them loop free, of course. You can lubricate them. So in 2009, I branded Fail Zero and came out on the commercial market. In 2011, we started WMD Guns to expand not only with nickel boron, but offer other coating technologies and expand the platforms from just BCGs to full up nickel boron firearms in various calibers, and then apply the coating to different parts of the firearms and market those, suppressors, fire control groups, and those kinds of things.
Right.
And so that's how we got started. Interesting thing about WMD Guns, you know, we understand that there's not just one best coating, or the coating you sell is not always the best one just because it's the only one you sell. We offer an arsenal of different coating technologies in order to apply the right technology for the customer's requirements. And that is, we're not just selling nickel boron because that's the only coating we offer. Mm-hmm. We're putting nickel boron on these components. We're putting melanite or nitromet on barrels, and we're putting, so we can mix and match technologies and colors and aesthetics and performance requirements in order to gain and meet what the customer needs out of the coatings.
Right. Now, how long had the nickel boron coating been around, do you know, before it was used in the firearm applications?
Yeah, actually it was its first application, really commercially, was on F-100 engines. It was on 30 part numbers. Wow. Of that engine, and it allowed Pratt & Whitney to meet the government requirement for the warranty. So it wasn't meeting that reliability requirement until those parts were coated, and then that allowed Pratt & Whitney to carry on and do that. It's since progressed into the automotive field, and hadn't really been in the firearms world until Ed and I and team pioneered it over into the firearms.
Right. And for those that don't know, and without getting, I guess, too technical with it, what exactly is nickel boron? How do you describe that to somebody when they ask?
Yeah, it's, you know, there are harder coatings, and there are more lubricious coatings, say Teflon, but Teflon scratches off and ablates it at pretty low temperatures. The harder coatings are thinner and have microvoids in them. And so what nickel boron does is it combines the hardness and wear resistance with that lubricity in an optimized fashion. So really it's the best coating that combines both of those wear resistance and operating lubricity properties. So it's a Rockwell 70 plus, and it's got a coefficient of friction just above Teflon.
Wow.
So it has, you know, that's really where I got the fever, is you can just think, where who doesn't want to reduce friction and extend part life wear? You know, so that's where you start thinking about everywhere that the coating could be applied. It's applied in a bath, a commercial bath, a series of tanks you dip the parts in. If you picture a part you would dip in a glass of water, every surface that would get wet would have a uniform coating applied to it.
Right.
And the longer you leave it in that water, the thicker the coating gets. So it grows uniformly over all surfaces, so it's non-line of sight. Some of the coating technologies, one of the limitations of those technologies is that it's line of sight. That is, it can't get down deep into inside diameters,
like
the
application process, which are some more difficult.
Right.
Very, very cool. Now, with some of the other coatings, want to dive into those just a little bit, if you don't mind. The nitromet that you mentioned.
Yes.
What is nitromet?
Well, it's a salt bath nitric carburization. There are many names for it. There's an AMS spec, an ASTM spec for it, but it's all salt bath nitric carburizing. And so it goes by the names melanite, black nitride, tenifer.
Okay. Same thing, just different name.
Right, different names. And then each application house has its unique trade secrets on the salts they use or how they apply it or how often they desludge their tanks and how, you know, so that's really the difference in those technologies is who's applying it, what's their experience applying it, and, you know, are they getting consistent results? Do they have their processes under control? And that really goes for any coating technologies. And it's especially valid these days with the proliferation of some of the smaller shops that are trying to apply nickel boron on parts. But yeah, nitromet is a diffusion process. Historically, it's been used as a different type of heat treat. So it was never really meant to be a cosmetic coating. It was only when the QPQ process, which means quench, polish, quench. Mm-hmm. So it basically goes through the process, through the nitride process twice in order to get that nice black luster, the deep rich black that people have come to love on their barrels and gas blocks and things like that, bolt carriers.
Right. Okay. So that just
It's about a Rockwell 55, so it's not as hard as the nickel boron, but okay. It is a diffusion, so it doesn't add dimension to the part. And that's key, and sometimes when you're trying to apply coatings or processes to legacy parts that weren't ever designed for the tolerances of a thicker coating.
Gotcha. So, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, older firearms or something of that nature.
Right.
Gotcha. Right. Okay. And then I'm looking here. So you also do some stuff over there at WMD with nickel as well.
Yeah, see, we offer the variety of nickels. Electroless nickel is known in the auto industry and many industries. It's as deposited, it can be a bright luster. It's Rockwell's about 50, so it's a lower Rockwell, but then you can start putting additive to it. It's a very good corrosion resistance. Nickel is known for that. You can put additives such as Teflon. So you'll hear about nickel Teflon or nickel with boron nitride particles. That is, they're sprinkling, that's a simplified term, but in the bath itself, it has somewhere in the neighborhood of 30% Teflon particles floating around in there, and as the nickel deposits on the part, the Teflon is captured as well. These days, a lot of people are transitioning to electroless nickel with boron nitride. The boron nitride particle withstands temperature and pressures much better than Teflon. So while we offer that, I rarely put it on firearms parts because of the limitations that Teflon particle does have. And to date, even my metallurgists haven't convinced me or haven't answered the question of if there's 30% Teflon throughout the coating, 30% of the bond line has Teflon on it. And if nothing sticks to Teflon, then how do you achieve a tenacious bond? And in fact, that's one of the drawbacks of the particle-based nickels, is that the bond you get is tricky, yeah, and not as sufficient as the nickel boron is the same material throughout the crystal of the coating. So yeah, we do the nickel boron nitride. You can blacken that. You can get ENBN black.
Oh, okay.
So you can top coat over it. So. You can apply Cerakote over the top. We use Cerakote as a color, and you know, it's basically a good hard paint, but it doesn't really enter into the wear resistance market at all. But you can aesthetically coat any kind of nickel coated part, like uppers and lowers and hand guards. You can top coat them to any color you want to,
right,
which is nice.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, with the coating that you guys do you guys do anything at production level for anybody else? I mean, without, you don't have to mention any names, but do you offer that, or are there other manufacturers out there that utilize you guys for that?
Oh, absolutely. That, in fact, that was one of the three legs, that business legs, that we stood the company up on when we started WMD Guns. One of them was that we needed to let people know what could be done with these performance coatings, regardless of which coating it was. Back when we started, we were still in a phosphate phase and an anodized phase, and so performance coatings weren't as prolific as they are now. And so one of our legs was to develop products using these performance coatings and show people the reliability, the cleanability, the endurance and durability that these can add to your components. So we have a product section. We always wanted to maintain our link to the consumer, so We wanted to make sure that consumers could access these high-tech coatings and coatings that are applied in very large industrial facilities to get their gun coated. So one of the services we offer is people send us in their guns, and the gunsmiths take the guns apart. We strip down the old coatings, and then we recoat it with the various coatings that we have in our arsenal. And then the third leg is that once we do show OEMs, manufacturers, whether it's small, intermediate, or very large volume manufacturers, the benefits of having these, and we create a demand for the coating and people start asking for it, then we have production level tanks that do thousands of carriers at a time.
Wow.
So yeah, we do performance coating for a lot of OEMs in the industry.
And I'm guessing, just knowing from, you know, my local gun shops that do the bluing and the parkerizing and stuff like that, having those big tanks, I'm assuming the chemicals and the things you need to do these coatings are fairly expensive, correct?
Yes.
So doing a larger batch like that, you're actually able to make it a little more affordable that way.
Right. Exactly, because if they had to stop their production and then do John's gun parts, and one thing you have to think about is if John and Bob both send you in parts, you got to keep Bob's separate from John's and not mix them up. So, and that's tough for a high volume production shop to do. So what we do is make sure that we kind of batch all those together so that we can do a campaign run on the individual upgrade orders.
Gotcha.
Without disturbing production too much.
Right. Now, the tanks that I'm used to seeing are probably 8-10 inches wide by maybe 4 foot or so long. How big of tanks are you talking about with y'all's scale?
Yeah, it depends on the technology, but we have anything from 250 to 600 gallon tanks for nickel boron.
Wow.
And then we actually were partnered with the largest nitride tank in North America, and that's a meter by 3 meters, so three feet diameter by 9 feet deep.
Wow.
So you can fit a lot of barrels on that.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. So I guess those go in vertically then, as opposed
yes.
to... Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting. Now, I'm reading here on the website, by the way, that's WMDguns.com, about the range coating services. I think that's kind of unique for anybody that might have a range or that might go to a range that rents. Tell us a little bit about that service.
Yeah, well, one of the guys that has helped us build WMD Guns, Holden Chris, has run the Indian River County range, and he's got nearly 100,000 users per year at his range, and he helped develop this program because really seeing and testing and feeling the difference between a performance-coated rifle and a regular rifle is shooting it, getting it in your hands. And we wanted to allow ranges a deep discount in sending in either their demo guns or buying or getting some of our guns on their range, and we'll help them do that so that people can shoot it, and the armorers who are cleaning up the range guns start realizing how easy it is to clean, and they say, God, I like that gun over that gun. And then you see the durability and reliability, and it's a great way to get, you know, 50, 60,000 rounds on a gun. In fact, I just received back one of our NIBX Black Bolt carrier groups from a demo that I provided, I'd say about a year and a half ago. It's got 30,000 rounds on it. I just did an analysis of the coating. There's one little chip the black wore through, which it's designed such that there's this integrated coating. The NIBX Black is a black, very hard shell over the nickel boron, but it's a thin shell, and so when it wears through that shell right on the ramp underneath the carrier, it's down to the nickel boron, so it still has another life left to it, and the other areas of the carrier look spectacular. So when you're talking about performance coatings, you should be expecting a very, very long life out of these components, and that's the benefit.
Yeah, for most people, I mean, that literally is a lifetime.
Yeah, but for the military and for our law enforcement professionals and who are out there shooting and competing and running it, and that's really, you know, as I said earlier, that was our roots and why we started coding firearms in the first place, and we still love to support those groups and absolutely give them the best equipment that we can.
Right. Well, it sounds like you're going about as far as the coding and you know, from the jump, getting the word out there and how you're approaching all that. In a very sound, very solid way. So how did it deviate from just the coatings aspect off into the firearms and the components and things like that?
It was a way to show and convince people. Chris, you know, in 2009, I had an Olympic shooter come up to my SHOT Show table and pound her fist on the table that said, you could not run a 1911 dry. You just can't do it. I'm an Olympic shooter, and I know it can't be done. And I gave her the 1911, said, go test it. And 3,000 rounds later, she had a law enforcement out in Colorado help her shoot. And wow, she sent in her pistol, her competitive Smith & Wesson 1911 into me, and sent mine back and said, here, cope mine. You're right. So the products really help convince people, and it shows that, you know, when I offer a lifetime guarantee on the coating, you know, we're standing behind our products. We're standing behind the fact that there's technical reasons the coating works. It's not snake oil, and we stand behind them. And the products is one way to do that, and accelerate the adoption of these technologies across the firearms industry a little, you know, quicker, other than just trying to convince people it works. We're showing them it works. Mm-hmm. But we have grown. Just recently at the SHOT Show, we announced our sling stock.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So even progressing from just coating services to coated products, now we're into advancing the AR products in ways where we see it's needed. So the sling stock is the world's first, the world's only. It's a patented a retractable 7-foot sling inside of the AR buttstock. So it's retrofits onto any mil-spec buffer tube, and it gives you a sling whenever, wherever you need it, but it's not there when you don't need it. It's not a burden. You don't have to worry about rubber banding it up or bunching it up or which side it's on or whether it's fit for you or the 6'5 guy or the 5'8 guy or the man or the woman, left-handed or right-handed. It was really designed for the law enforcement professional, so that when he's trying to get his firearm out of the car and the sling's not hanging up on the rack, it's not pulling or snagging, and so he's getting out of the car addressing the threat. When it's time to go to a sidearm or handcuffs, he can sling it up and throw it over his back behind him and continue doing his work. And then when he needs to get back, he just zips that thing right back into the buttstock, puts it in his car, and he never sees his sling again until he needs it.
Right, and it's definitely a very interesting concept, and I encourage anybody to jump over to WMD Guns and check that one out. I know you got some pictures and stuff over there. As far as the operation of the sling stock, does it kind of work like a tape measure? Is that similar to the concept?
I like to visualize a seat belt.
There you go, a seat belt. Okay.
So a tape measure, you know, you do have to buy a tape measure, you know, every 6 months or so if you're using it, and the device fails. But think about your seat belt, how often you're in and out of your seat belt, and how often that retraction spring fails. Mm-hmm. You know, it's probably every 15 years. And that's one big question we got at the Chief of Police Conference and the NTOA we went to. It was, how durable is this, is one question. And what happens if you get debris up in there? You know, will it still work? And so I did a video. I live in Southeast Florida, so I took a short jaunt to the beach and dunked it in the ocean, dunked it in the surf where you get ocean water and sand,
right.
Took it up on the dry sand, pounded sand in it, retracted, pulled it out, put sand in it, retracted it back up, and it worked throughout all of that. At the SHOT Show, we had an interesting group from Nebraska come by, and they asked about the durability as well. And they said, you know, we've had some of our guys fall on the buttstock, and it cracks and breaks. Well, the polymer we're using has been developed over 20 years and has been optimized, so it's harder than your normal buttstock. So I told them, I said, well, go over there and trip over there. There's a piece of concrete where we're at SHOT Show. We're on a corner booth there, and I said, go over there and fall and break it. It's Thursday. I don't, you know. It was a 3D printing. It's not even the molded production model. So the two big guys, they must have been 260 pounds, and he acted like he tripped, and he bore all his weight, and he crashed down on the buttstock in the middle of the SHOT Show, made a whole racket noise. But he didn't break it. He did it again. He didn't break it. So he was convinced that you know, we produced a product that's durable enough to get started. Now the spring mechanism, If it ever fails, you know, we'll have a 2-3 year warranty on it. But it's a replacement module, so you don't have to replace the whole stock. It's three screws. You take that module out, and we slip another one in there.
Well, that was gonna be my next question too. Was if you did get, you know, dirt, grit, and grime, and whatever up in there, was there a way you could clean that?
Yes. Yeah. You take a cover off, and that's what I did when I was playing in the sand with it. When I got back, I wanted to examine, you know, how much sand got in there and how easy it to get out and how easy it to wash the cord. So yeah, you take the cover off and three screws. You extend the module, you rinse it off, you spray down the inside with water, you put it back together, and off you go. So it operates. It's a single point or two point. You know, people have preferences, and actually the job demands one or the other depending on what situation you're in. But it does have a quick disconnect swivel that everyone's used to, and then we've also got a patented Picatinny clasp that it's a one finger operation to hook it anywhere on your Picatinny rail, either the top or any side ones you have on your firearm, and it can hook on and hook off anywhere if the officer's engaged and or at nighttime and he can't look down to find the little swivel hole, he can just using his motor muscles just hook on that clasp to anywhere on the Picatinny rail and remain functional and addressing the threat.
That's really interesting, and that works too when you're talking about, you know, a specialized situation that might require that to be further forward or to the rear on your rail too.
Exactly. Exactly.
Very interesting. Very interesting concept.
It was born out of you know, Tim Greenwood is working real close with us. He's the patent holder. We had started a design, and we did a patent search and found Tim had already patented it, but he stopped at the prototype stage. And we partnered up with him, and he's had great input into the process, and he's a LEO out in Kansas. Mm-hmm. So his user experience has played a lot into the design, as well as the other operators that we've gone out to and tested with. And Doug Porter and Design Port finalized and productionized the design. The molds are in final form. We had one minor issue with the one of the molding tools, and so we're fixing that. We'll be out in March with production units.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Now, with some of the firearms that you guys have, I know I was able to lay eyes on quite a few. Beautiful is the first word that comes to mind. But then talking with other people that have actually, you know, had their hands on them, you know, they say that, and I say rifles, pistols, everything that you guys do, they said that you get a very boutique, you know, experience at a very reasonable price with the stuff that you guys put out. So what is the main goal with the firearms that you're putting out?
Well, it is that. It's focused on really optimizing the shooting experience for the users, and that means a lot of things, and it means managing the recoil, giving them an excellent value, making sure that they can hit what they're trying to hit. So you start with match grade barrels, and then you have billet uppers and lowers, but it's you know, making sure that, you know, their experience is optimized, and so they've got a favorite gun, and then now it's corroding, or they're at the range and they're having to stop and clean their gun all the time, or it's, you know, the 22s are stopping, so the coatings help their experience because they get longer usage between stoppages. Mm-hmm. They don't have to clean right away. If they do clean right away, it's a lot easier. So they, you know, some people love spending hours cleaning their guns, and that's great. We don't advocate not cleaning by any means, but we want to make it easier and more enjoyable for people to go out and have a good long day at the range and know that their guns are going to work. We're providing a superb product, and that it's not going to empty their pocketbook. They're quite a few rifles more expensive than ours that probably wouldn't last up in a shoot-off on the range with us. Mm-hmm. So throw it in the back of your pickup truck if that's how you like to do it. Throw it in a trophy case if you like to, because not only are they performance and durable and will shoot whenever you need it to shoot, they're pretty cool-looking rifles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I can definitely attest to that. Now, is billet, as far as, I guess, especially the AR-15s that you have out there, are they all billet?
We have both billet and forged. Chris, back in 2013, at that rush, the forging manufacturers, what we found was, and maybe the larger companies were getting the cream of the crop, but we were finding a very poor quality of forgings coming out, such that when you do coat them, they had pressed in, they haven't cleaned their equipment, they were pressing in contaminants into the forged aluminums, wow, which would come out when you start coating them. So we ended up scrapping several lots, and I've just basically got fed up and went to billets. And what I've found is billets, you know, it offers you a little tighter fit. They're stronger. They are more expensive. But we offer both. So now I'm finding better quality forgings again. So we do offer forgings. And in fact, I've just released an entry-level rifle to dealers and consumers. It'll be on the website shortly, but it's a sub $1,100 gun. Should come in around the $750-$800.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Dollars. So, and it's utilizing more of the anodized and things like that. Still has a nitride barrel, still has a nickel boron bolt carrier group, but it doesn't have our premium products all throughout the gun like our normal Beast line of rifles does.
Gotcha. So you're more putting them in the more critical areas, more or less, on the cheaper models.
Right. We're considering what a lot of dealers have told us what people would do. They go in and buy their $600, $700 gun and then upgrade it with our nickel boron bolt carrier group. They'd put a better handguard on there. They'd end up upgrading everything, and they'd spend $1,100-$1,200 on it anyway.
Right, exactly.
And so we've started addressing that market with some black anodized guns. The nickel boron guns are still around, I think it's $1,250 retail. Mm-hmm. And back to your value question, you know, people, when I first start walking them through the gun, and then they say, oh yeah, but how much is that? And I tell them it's $1,250, and their eyes light up like, wow, that's, you know, that I thought it was going to be like $1,800, $2,000, mm-hmm, for the rifle. So
now with the custom stuff, do you guys do very many of the custom firearms, the custom specialty builds?
Yeah, we do, and that's a fun piece of the business. You know, when we started doing our Survivor series or the Battle Worn or Distress look, mm-hmm, with our nickel boron, people really thought that was a great look. We've done some camo patterns with the nickel boron. I've done a couple with giveaways or charities where we'll nickel boron the whole thing, and then we'll do a certain Cerakote pattern to it, and then people send in, and we'll basically build the rifle. We have key mod handguards, M-lock handguards, all sorts of twists on our barrels, different barrel lengths. So if we get a special request and a special color and a pattern, then we'd certainly accommodate that.
What's the weirdest request you've ever got? Has anything come to mind?
We did a bottom of the sea antiquing kind of Cerakote, which had about seven or eight different colors to it. It looks like if you pulled a treasure chest up from the bottom, and it had that that antique copper look. So it had a little blue and it had some runs on it. So that was pretty interesting. Look to it. And then we're finishing up an all titanium nitride AK right now.
Wow.
for a dealer shop here in Florida, and that takes a lot of time and a lot of preparation to get it look right, but he's already got a spot in his trophy case for it, so we're obligated to finish it up for him here pretty quick.
Now, the titanium nitride, is that the gold color?
Yes.
Finish. Okay.
Yeah. So it's going to be an all gold like you used to see in the cartel movies.
Right. Yeah, that'll be a cool one in an AK right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely interesting for sure. Is it mostly, you know, AK, AR stuff, or do you guys, I mean, with semi-auto, obviously, that's where the wear comes into play and the coatings are important. Or do you get, you know, bolt action guys or, you know, shotgun guys or anything like that that want stuff done as well?
Oh, yeah, we get the gamut. Right now we have an M1 in.
Oh, wow.
M1 Grand. We do lots of shotguns. We've done some shotguns with the Department of Energy and our local Sheriff's Department, mm-hmm. which is out on the water, and help with their corrosion issue that they were having. So you basically get off the boat and come wipe it down. So shotguns are a great platform for the coatings. Bolt actions, you just have to be careful and watch the tolerances on the bolt and action. We've worked with several manufacturers to where they're engineering for the coating, which is the right thing to do. And then we have the option, one of the neatest ones we did was a DLC on the bolt and nickel boron on the action, and the two-tone black and matte gray look was fabulous, but even more important, the performance was just superb on that. Not real nice locking and unlocking. So, yeah, we have to consider the different designs of the products that are sent to us, as well as the temperatures that those materials can handle. As you may know, the nitride temperature, for example, is 1,050, 1,100 degrees. DLC chambers and the PVD chambers can get the part at elevated temperatures, but not too hot. Nickel boron's only a couple hundred degrees. So these factors all go into when people send us the older guns or more valuable, like $3,000-$4,000 guns. We really have to take our time in going through it to make sure that it leaves here more valuable than it came in, and
right.
that there was no detriment to the function or the materials, substrates that are used in the firearms. Mm-hmm. Now, if you think back, there's some beaded sights that are brazed on. So did they use high temp or low temp brazing?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so there's a little research that goes into doing some specialty firearms that come in.
Right.
For sure.
Right. Now, I know you've got a wide variety of obviously of parts and stuff over there on WMD Guns, and you know there's a bunch of people out there that love to build their own. So if somebody was interested in that, do you offer everything there at WMD Guns, from, you know, box, stock, barrel, the entire gamut of parts for someone to make their own?
Yes, we offer everything from a mag catch button all the way up to a chassis, which is everything but the furniture, all the way up to the firearm. So we can sell one part or hundreds of parts. And then we have kits. We have kitted up certain parts, like lower parts kits. And then we also have, in the last year, added accent kits, which allow people to go back and change out the controls, the phosphated controls, and they can add it when Smith & Wesson red or titanium blue or Tiffany blue or orange. So you can change out your controls and just change the color of the controls to spiff up your firearm a little bit as far as aesthetics. But the key is that everything in our shop has a performance coating on it. And to my knowledge, one example is that the forward assist that we offer in our Nitromet, we're the only ones out there that are providing nitride on that part. There's internal springs that you don't want to ruin, and you can't expose it to the temperatures, so we figured out a way to do that. Same with the ejection port door. And so what that gives you is this rich black color, and it's a Rockwell 55, and so it doesn't scratch off like phosphate, which leads to corrosion initiation, and it's just a really nice deep rich black color, so it matches your anodized and your hand guards if you're going for that black, or it can make a beautiful two-tone when you have a nickel boron. And we've started, in fact, all of our rifles come with that Nitromet accent kit or nickel boron accent kit, so that all the parts are coated and all the parts will last a long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think Yeah, I think that ultimate chassis is a novel idea, because you've got so many people out there that'll buy a rifle and then turn around and a lot of them, even at the same time that they're ordering the rifle, right? They will turn around and order all the furniture for it. So
it
comes in and they've got extra furniture, of course, just sitting around at that point. There's a little bit of waste involved. And probably doesn't have as nearly as good of a rifle as if they would have just broken down and got that ultimate chassis.
Yeah, we came out with that in 2014 in response. You know, the AR market's been through its up and down swings several cycles over the last 10 years. Yeah. And during that cycle, you know, all of the dealers had just a store load of furniture, all the parts that, you know, there was a big rush in 13, and then they were stuck with it in 14. We said, well, instead of buying our guns, buy this, and then you can sell your customers everything else in your store. And whether they like Tapco or Daniel Defense or Magpul, you can outfit them with whatever you have there and whatever they want. Right. And it went over really well, and I think there's even a couple other companies that are doing that, but of course they're not performance coded. They just stop putting furniture on their guns as well.
Right, sure. Now, it seems like, at least over the last couple of years, seems like there's been a shift, and the popularity of these AR pistols are really crazy. Are you guys seeing that trend there as well?
Yeah, they're really hot right now. And the distributors are all clamoring for them. And they're just saying AR pistols are the hottest thing. And I think it leads back to, you know, the ATF ruling that you can shoulder an AR pistol. You can put a brace on it and shoulder it. And so, you know, that really sparked up a lot of interest in consumers on having 9 and also going into the pistol caliber carbines, you know, having the 9 and 40s and 45 caliber AR pistols. So yeah, we've developed the AR pistol in 5.56, 300 blackout. We can make it in 2.24 Valkyries if that's your choice, but we have all the calibers. And then we've got a 9mm PCC, and there's also a lot of international interest in these pistol caliber carbines that are coming out as some of the laws in those countries change.
Right. So,
yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that, but there's you start talking about international, and there's an awful lot of restrictions when it comes to caliber, for sure.
Right. Right. And, you know, just recently I think everybody's been reading that the administration's going to relax some of the rules there and perhaps take the firearms off the ITAR list and or have it go through and comply with ITAR and go to the EAU regulations, which aren't as stringent.
Wow.
But it goes through commerce instead of Department of State. So
yeah.
I think that'll help with some of the exports too.
Yeah, and my understanding with ITAR, there is things that you would think currently that you would think would go through ITAR that actually go through the Department of Commerce already.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, shot shells, for example, I believe go through Department of Commerce and are not subject to ITAR. So that's good to know that there potentially is some movement that way. That certainly helps a lot of you guys out there that are doing this.
Oh, sure. Them. Yeah, it just broadens the customer base, and when the markets slack a little bit here, it picks up a little bit over there and helps you even out the peaks and valleys a little bit in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. So, I think we're about out of time here, Wynn. If you would, let everybody know how they can get in touch with you guys if they've got some questions about what you might be able to do for them, and then if they want to take a look at some of these products.
Absolutely. Again, my name is Wynn Atterbury, and you can reach me at Wynn, WYNN, at WMDGuns.com. Our website is WMDGuns.com, and we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and from there you can get my phone number. But any kind of questions, you know, we're known as folks who like to help point people in the right direction. If we don't have the coding or we don't have the answer, hopefully we know someone who does, and we're not shy about pointing you out that way. So don't be shy about bringing us some hard problems, and we'll help you find the solutions.
There you go. You can't get any more helpful than that, I'm telling you. So, thank you, Wynn, for joining us, and hopefully we can have you back soon. Really appreciate your time today.
Well, thanks, Chris. I appreciate that. Have a good evening.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertac.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertac. Have a great weekend.